sense of humor doesn't necessarily work for everyone. Anyhow, for the benefit of Sainted Denny, and thank you, Denny, Debbie, who's doing the transcript, what is your name and how do you spell it, Dr. Dweck?
Alyssa Dweck, A-L-Y-S-S-A, Dweck, D-W-E-C-K.
You know, you said that with sort of a adding an A between the D and the W. Dweck?
Yeah, not really. Dweck.
Oh, okay. That's just what I heard. Okay. It's just Dweck to you, Chris. Anyhow, thanks for joining us today on Body Language on Radio MD. It is always a joy, Dr. Dweck.
Thank you for having me.
Let's talk about fertility and infertility and how you do a workup and treat folks. And much of this was inspired by an article that was carried throughout the world the other day, quoting Italian fashion designers Domenico Dolce and Stefano Gabbana, which is a pretty, I don't know if you're, they make very, very interesting clothes, which unfortunately I cannot afford. They were quoted in the Telegraph saying, "I oppose gay adoptions. The only family is the traditional one with no chemical offsprings or a rented uterus." An interesting phrase. "Life has a natural flow and there are things that should not be changed. You are born to a father and a mother, or at least that's how it should be. I call these children of chemistry, synthetic children with semen chosen from a catalog." Needless to say, that didn't play very well to the larger population. But it's an interesting segue into our discussion about fertility issues and, to quote the title of a book, Everything Conceivable. Tell me about your practice and what you see and hear when it, in terms of your patient population, about fertility issues. Because frankly, Dr. Dweck, and of course you are the author of V is for Vagina, your A to Z guide to periods, piercings, pleasures, and so much more. This is a whole new world out there in terms of conception.
Yes, it really is. Look, I don't like to make any political comments. And
oh, go ahead.
Their opinion.
However, jump right in.
I see all comers in my office. So I will see your traditional male-female couples who have attempted pregnancy for, you know, by definition, more than a year without success, which is when we really start to get more aggressive into looking into why they're not getting pregnant. And I do also see, gay female couples who are looking to be pregnant. So we deal with both. But just to talk about the general fertility workup, the standard definition of infertility is trying to get pregnant for a full year without success. And once you reach that point, it's very reasonable to consider a workup. A lot of women, particularly in my community, get a little bit impatient and will come in after 4 to 6 months of trying religiously without success, and that's just fine too, especially if their age is advancing, and that's, of course, never on any of our sides.
In other words, if they're nibbling at the age of 40.
Right.
We've done lots of shows on IVF, in vitro fertilization, and I can tell you from chatting with a lot of women and men too, that when you really, really, really want to get pregnant, having intercourse isn't necessarily a lot of fun in the traditional sense. Rather, it becomes more of a job title.
Yes, it becomes more of a chore. And it also adds a layer of stress because there's such performance anxiety both from both partners and also just waiting each week and day for the time when you can test and see if you are pregnant. Right. So the typical fertility workup includes looking into problems in several areas. First, believe it or not, there are about a third of couples who are having trouble getting pregnant. It turns out to be a male factor. So it's very important for the male in a traditional heterosexual couple to get checked and have a semen analysis and see whether the count is low, of semen or sperm rather, and see also whether the motility or the way the sperm are moving is abnormal in any way, and to see whether the shape of the form and the form of the semen are abnormal. So that's very important. So we typically will send the male for a semen analysis and then for urologic workup if there's a problem.
What is the difference? Mm-hmm. Well, now, excuse me, Dr. Dweck. At what point, and I know I'm moving ahead here, would an individual or a couple see a reproductive endocrinologist? First of all, what is the difference between a reproductive endocrinologist in terms of fertility issues and an OBGYN, an obstetrician gynecologist, which is your specialty?
Yes, so a traditional OBGYN can take care of an initial fertility workup, which includes looking into the problem, whether it's unexplained infertility, a hormonal or ovulation problem, a semen problem, a tubal blockage problem, or the like. And many traditional OBGYNs will prescribe medications such as Clomid or even do procedures like I do called artificial insemination to assist people with pregnancy when they have an identified problem. But once it comes to the point of using more aggressive medications or IVF or other of the much more advanced procedures to help with fertility, a reproductive endocrinologist who's really an infertility specialist will typically be called upon to help with these things.
Most of the folks who criticized the comments by Dulce and Gamania were male gay couples, for example, like Elton John or Neil Patrick Harris, who retained surrogates to in order to become parents. But that is, once again, generally getting into the province, I assume, of the reproductive endocrinologist who would essentially handle a lot of that.
Yes, well, once a surrogate is pregnant, a traditional OBGYN will be assuming her care. But I'd like to bring up another population of people where surrogates are really used and very valuable, and that's in the cancer survivor. So if you have a female cancer patient who has lost her fertility as a result of treatment at a young age.
With chemotherapy.
Or surgery, which may involve removal of the uterus. Then, you know, a surrogate is used in this situation, and we find that this is valuable. So there are options out for all kinds of populations.
That's interesting. So if an individual had a hysterectomy or oophorectomy, as the case may be, removing the ovaries or perhaps cervical cancer, any number of issues. And we haven't even gotten into the whole world of uterine fibroids. Speaking of laparoscopic myomectomies, as I was joking about earlier, tell us, what are uterine fibroids and how can those inhibit a woman's ability to not only become pregnant, but also take that pregnancy to term?
Right. So fibroids are typically benign uterine growths. They typically are not cancerous. They're very, very common. And depending on their location and size, they can impair getting pregnant. So specifically, fibroids that are present inside the cavity of the uterus may be something that can cause troubles for a woman with getting pregnant, and removal might be reasonable to consider. And then other fibroids that are located in the body of the uterus or externally hanging off a little stalk of the uterus.
A pedunculated.
Pedunculated.
I've
fibroids.
Wanted to say that word for months, pedunculated.
Well, there you go. You've had the opportunity. So all of these types of fibroids can grow during a pregnancy once a pregnancy is already established and possibly increase the risk of preterm labor, preterm delivery, pain, and other complications.
In fact, I seem to remember from my traumatic medical school training that uterine fibroids are frequently sized as they would relate to the size of a fetus. Is that correct?
Yes, the size of a pregnant uterus. So often we'll say, oh, your fibroid uterus is 8 weeks size, suggesting that it's about the same size as an 8 week pregnant uterus.
And as someone once said, typically the uterus is an SRO, a single room occupancy, and when it's crowded in there, it's very, very difficult for an individual, as you suggested earlier, to either become pregnant or sustain that pregnancy.
Correct. I will make that caveat, though, that many women with fibroids get pregnant, go to term, have absolutely no problem whatsoever. So it's really an individual issue.
Bottom line, if people can't get pregnant in the more traditional manner, and we're referring, or if people cannot become pregnant in heterosexual couples, male and females, in more traditional couplings, at what point should people knock on your door and just say, look, you know, this doesn't seem to be working. It's been how many months?
Right. So 12 months is the traditional answer. However, if somebody is advancing in their age, certainly by 35 and trying 6 months or more, I would recommend at least an initial workup.
Oh, really? Well, I would imagine that is a huge confidence builder, too, in terms of eliminating possibilities and scenarios that seem to be inhibiting the process. Would you agree?
Sure. I would absolutely agree. Plus, if families are considering, you know, more than one child, you really have to use age as a guide to when to get aggressive.
Oh, that's very interesting. It's really much as the article featuring Dulce and Gabbana suggested, we live in a much different world than when you started practicing, what was it, a couple years ago? But
yes.
It must be very exhilarating, very exciting for you to see all sorts of couples, two women, perhaps two men. Do you ever see men and counsel them, or do you hand those folks off to another specialist?
Well, I don't see men in my practice because my practice is limited to the care of women. However, I have taken care of surrogates who are pregnant and delivering, and it's a joy regardless of who I'm taking care of because it's such a wonderful field, obstetrics.
You really love this work, don't you?
I do. It's exciting and never dull and always challenging and lovely people along the way.
Much like me. Our guest is Dr. Alyssa Dweck, OBGYN, obstetrician gynecologist. She is the author of V is for Vagina, Your A to Z Guide to Periods, Piercings, Pleasures, and Fertility Issues, which we've been discussing today on Body Language on Radio MD. How's that for a good wrap-up?
Thank you so much for having me.
You're a lot of fun to have on the air. It must be... Do you have any idea how many children you've delivered? Or did you lose?
I have no idea.
Did you lose count?
I've lost count. I'm sure it's in well into the at least 2,000 over the years.
Really?
But tough to count. Lost count a while ago. But truth be told, I must divulge and come clean that I actually did stop delivering babies a couple of months ago. Just because it was time. But that doesn't mean I haven't had all the experiences that I did mention on your show.
So are you into the second generation of patients now? Are you seeing the children of your patients or grandchildren?
I am seeing the grandchildren of my patients. It is so crazy scary. But this is my 23rd year in practice.
Uh-huh.
And, especially if a woman delivers really young and then her daughter comes in, which is usually the case with your gyno, and then their granddaughter comes in, it's a little eye-opening.
But it must be really interesting when you meet a... What would it be, a grandmother in her, what, early 50s or late 40s?
Yeah, early 50s. I have one comes to mind right now. She's a young grandmother in her early 50s, and she has two granddaughters that I see. They're young teens, and it's crazy. And they come in and say, do you remember? You delivered me. And
oh, of course I remember. I just recognize that smile anywhere.
Yeah, but this is the natural history of most OBGYNs. I know there are a lot of real strong cowboys out there, but it was my time
to
get a little more sleep.
And our time is up. Thank you, Dr. Dweck, for joining us today Body Language. As always,
so
a
much.
Joy, and thanks so much for jumping in so
sure,
quickly.
Sure, you got it.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.